100 days and counting.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Today is the 100th day of the new Democratic Congress. The Democrats had six things on their first 100 days agenda. The House passed all those items by mid-January, but the Senate, well, not much has gotten through the Senate. Pat Loeb has more.
The Senate passed its own version of a minimum wage hike, but that still has to be reconciled with the House version. It's taken no action yet on lowering Medicare drug prices, reducing interest rates on student loans, or ending big oil subsidies. Still, Congress has been busy. It met 48 days in the first quarter, a third more than any of the last three Congresses. Thomas Mann of the Brookings Institution says it may not have produced many new laws, but it's held far more oversight hearings on serious public policy issues.
Congress has awakened from its deep sleep when it comes to overseeing the executive, and that certainly has been a hallmark of the first 100 days.
Mann says the reality is it'll take a lot more than 100 days to pass such an ambitious agenda. Senate Democrats say they hope to get the bills to the president's desk by the summer recess. I'm Pat Loeb for Marketplace.
We had a story yesterday about Merck's new arthritis drug, Arcoxia. It's a painkiller like Vioxx. Yesterday, an FDA committee recommended not approving Arcoxia, a 20-to-1 vote. One doctor said there's no proof the drug is any safer or more effective than Vioxx. On Wall Street, the Dow put on 68 points to 12,552. The NASDAQ climbed 21 to 2480. The S&P 500 rose 8 points to 1447. Stocks in Asia were pretty flat today. The presidential candidates are raking in the fundraising dough. First 3 months of the year, they brought in a record $128 million. Tomorrow, those 18 candidates have to report exactly how they're spending that money. Our Stephen Henn has a preview.
If you want to know where Hillary Clinton and her people like to eat, one place to look is campaign finance reports. Starting last summer, PillPack, Clinton's political action committee, dropped more than $1,200 on dinners at Dragonfly, a restaurant lounge that specializes in sushi, sake, and electronica. Across town, Barack Obama's folks are more into Washington's old school. They've been spending time and money at the Monocle, a Capitol Hill institution complete with dark paneling and politicians' portraits, where senators devour steaks in sartorial splendor. All this dining out is paid for by the candidates' political action committees, or leadership PACs, and all the leading presidential candidates have them. Rudy Giuliani's PAC, Solutions America, dropped more than $54,000 on a fundraiser at the Four Seasons last summer.
The kind of spending that a campaign committee does might be very similar to the kind of spending that a leadership PAC would do.
Steve Weissman is the associate director at the Campaign Finance Institute. He says by looking at how the candidates' PACs raise and spend money, you can get some hints about who their presidential campaigns are likely to hire, who they will hit up for cash, and how fast they're likely to spend it.
These PACs can spend money on consultants, on travel. You can give gifts to your supporters. You can buy them meals.
You can even spend money on yourself. Leadership PACs were supposed to be a way for party big shots to raise campaign money and spread it around. But today, in some cases, they've become personal slush funds. And for politicians eyeing a presidential bid, they're another important source of cash. In the last election, the PACs run by the six leading presidential candidates gave away just $1.7 million to federal campaigns, but they spent more than $20 million on themselves for staff, research, and fundraising, even the occasional goodie. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com. By Medtronic, applauding the many contributions of America's volunteers. You can find volunteer opportunities in your community today by visiting volunteermatch.org. And by the Duke Executive MBA, developing leaders and accelerating careers around the world with four top-ranked executive MBA programs for working professionals. DukeExecutiveMBA.com.
Ryanair could be coming to the U.S. Yesterday, the CEO of Europe's biggest low-cost airline said he's working on a plan. Our European correspondent, Stephen Beard, joins us from London. Stephen, what does he have in mind?
He says that within 4 years, he's going to launch a low-cost service from Europe to the US, and the fares will start for as little as $14 one way.
$14, so $28 round trip.
Indeed. It does actually recall the jibe that an Irish comedian made when Virgin first launched its transatlantic service. He asked, would you want to fly across the Atlantic with an airline that doesn't go the whole way? I mean, it really does pose some big questions. I mean, one should say about Ryanair that when you look a little closer, these flights are not always quite what they seem or as cheap as they seem. It's only a small percentage, usually, of the total number of flights that go for that low figure.
But even so, just the idea of being able to fly across the Atlantic for that cheap, how is that possible?
There's no doubt that now, as a result of this recent Open Skies agreement between the US and Europe to liberalize transatlantic air travel, that low-cost, long-haul transatlantic flights are on their way. Indeed, we've already had a small Canadian carrier announcing the first, this is London to New York, and it's going to be one way, including taxes and charges, for less than $250. So that's pretty good.
But how can the airlines offer fares that cheap? Are there seats on the plane?
There will be seats, but probably not much else. The big question is, are passengers going to go for it? Because you're going to keep passengers in their seats virtually without any of the frills as normally associated with air travel for 7, 8, 10 or even more hours.
I'm sorry, frills with airline travel? What are you talking about, Stephen? What frills?
Oh, you don't use this expression.
Oh, we frills. Use the expression. We just don't have any frills. What are you talking about? Stephen, no frills Beard from Europe. Thanks.
Flying by the seat of his pants.
Our correspondent, Stephen Beard, in London. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.